call tonight's meeting of the Planning and Zoning Commission to order. Hi, Jonathan. Perfect timing. Could we get a roll call, please?
Steele.
Here.
Sherwood.
Here.
Cable.
Here.
McBride.
Here.
Mins.
Here.
Merkin.
Here.
Very good. Are there any changes or additions to the agenda? I have one in a moment, but any others? Okay. We have been asked to move item 7.2 to after 7.4. So essentially 7.2 would be changed to 7.4 and everything would move up. If there are no other changes, could we get a motion to approve that agenda?
So moved.
I'll second it.
I'll second it.
Okay. Motion by Merkin, second by Kathy. Let's just do a voice vote on the agenda, please. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Okay. The modified agenda is approved. Are there any changes or additions to the minutes, the draft minutes from October 3rd? Hearing none, the minutes will be approved, will stand approved. At this time, we do have a moment for public comment from anyone who'd like to offer any comments or suggestions or ask questions of the commission on issues not already scheduled to be heard tonight, so not already on the agenda. Is there anyone who would like to address the commission tonight? Okay, very good. Then we are on to item 6.1, discussion of the draft countywide watershed assessment implementation with Leanne Harder.
What I'm going to do is try and focus on kind of an overview of where we are, and then we can end with some of the devil in the details. As the commission is well aware of, this was the draft watershed assessments were brought to the commission for recommendations sometime earlier this fall. The Board of Supervisors then took action from both the Planning and Zoning Commission and the Conservation Board, and then accepted the watershed assessments in August. At that point, the Board of Supervisors tasked staff and a working group. It'd be Jerry, Deb Schildroth, Michael Cox, Conservation Director, and myself to then look at the watershed assessments and come up with a matrix of how we go forward, some marching orders. I want to take a step back because we're starting to hear some rumblings that the watershed assessment is not all it could be or should be. That's intentional. The proposal that was drafted for us to bring a consultant on board to do the watershed assessment was fully intended from the time we started drafting that request for proposals until the time the board accepted that assessment to be general in nature. It's kind of the homework, if you will, that we can use to start doing our outline to write a paper, as an analogy that I've come up with. So we're in that point right now that we're writing the outline. And the next work will be, you know, putting the paper together. So the assessments that we all saw and read and reviewed, that's the starting point. So staff met a series of several times. Actually, should have counted. I'm not sure how many times we met, but we met four times. In person and as well as, you know, via email and just in person one-on-one communications, we came up with what was delivered to you today or last week as a draft implementation matrix. So this is kind of that outline for how we go forward. One thing we felt very important to do prior to coming to the Planning and Zoning Commission and the Conservation Board, and Michael Cox and myself both presented to the Conservation Board past Monday. We wanted to get some ideas from stakeholders, potential stakeholders, of what their viewpoints were of what we'd put together as a staff. So we sent it out via SurveyMonkey format. We have 6 questions, and I won't reiterate those, but those are on the cover of my memo I drafted for everyone. Our response, unfortunately, was not as good as we'd hoped for. We only had 5 respondents. The packet that you received, when did you post packets? Friday? Last Friday. Actually, only showed 4. We had 1 come in late Friday, so you have a revised copy of with at your desk right now that has respondent number 5. We sent the survey out to about 40 people, so it's really, from a turnout standpoint, not ideal. That survey still remains open, though, and we'll still collect input from those entities. I'm not going to dive down into the respondents and the survey that you can read, but I do want to just explain the format. The first page, I'm looking at the one that says survey results and written comments on the top. The first page looks different than the subsequent pages. It's listed by category, regulatory, programmatic, and potential partners. We had 1 individual that responded that did not answer the survey questions. Instead, that individual looked at the draft implementation matrix and put sticky notes on it, on the implementation matrix itself. So this captures that individual's comments on the implementation matrix. Does that make sense? It doesn't. You can't go then and apply those as where they fit in the survey. From that point forward, though, the questions are highlighted in, I don't know if I printed in color, either green or gray for you, and then the respondents. We purposefully did not leave off, or we purposely left off, or did not include the names or the organizations of the respondents. We do know that, but we did not feel appropriate to include that because it was we did not share it with them that would be shared. Any questions thus far on the survey? So I'll be frank. 1 comment.
Was it useful?
No, and that it's going to seem like we planned this. So I think it was Nancy Franz of the Conservation Board said, really our responses are kind of angel responses. You know, we got the answers that we expected from the 5 that cared enough to respond. So from that vein, not really. I mean, nothing is jumping out at me like, wow, I did not expect that. There's nothing in that light. That is some concern that I think some of the reason we want to leave it open and continue to solicit input from that in that regard.
Can you talk?
Looks like a great start.
Yeah.
Can you talk about how you publicize and you targeted folks to for the?
It's not for general review. It's a staff identified list of stakeholders.
Is this potential stakeholders? There's a table somewhere.
List of potential partners is part of that. We had some individuals we knew that had been involved throughout the process as well.
Thirty-two was the goal.
Altogether, there are about 45 emails. The individuals to whom surveys, the number of individuals to whom Survey Monkey was distributed was about 45 people. So 5 of 45. We did have 2 individuals email back say they did not feel comfortable responding because they weren't involved with Story County. That was someone from the Iowa Flood Center, and I'm escaping a bit more of a state level organization, but still commending us for our efforts of doing that. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely.
Okay, so prior to even releasing the survey, though, we obviously had a draft implementation matrix. And 1 thing we internally were wrestling with was a series of broad questions that really kind of needed some guidance from our elected officials prior to actually anyone having marching orders to go forward with the rest of the implementation matrix. And if you read the cover memo, that is that last paragraph that states the draft implementation matrix starts with the following overall goal and set of next steps. The countywide watershed assessment conducted in 2018 was developed to serve as a starting point in guiding future watershed management decisions. The assessment is a high-level overview of current watershed status. The assessment is not intended to be a final and static report. In addition to the actions outlined in the implementation plan, the county will, and this is where those overall arching ones are, one, work to identify where further study is needed. Second, regularly review prioritizations in the assessments and make necessary adjustments. Third bullet point is to identify who oversees the effort and strategies. There are a lot of action steps in this implementation matrix. With this bullet point goes an important discussion. Does the county have the appropriate resources to manage this type of a program? Do we look elsewhere? That's a very important discussion that needs to occur. Establish schedule for development of watershed management authorities. The fifth bullet point is to define and dedicate ongoing resources for further study and implementation. And lastly, commit to reviewing the implementation plan annually. So that last bullet point will likely occur as part of the C2C plan review. Ultimately, the watershed assessment and the implementation matrix will be tied into the C2C plan. That will be coming forward once we finally get action on this done, get this one wrapped up. So then the implementation matrix itself is organized on three main categories: regulatory, programmatic, and then capital projects, capital improvements. As we started going through the assessment and identify what we felt was appropriate to be plugged in to the matrix, and there were just some things we left off. And I'll get to that point here shortly. But as we start identifying things that staff thought should be pulled into an implementation matrix, they started logically categorizing themselves. And that's how we came up with these three categories. To the point of what we did not include, the Conservation Board did ask us to write that down as a list. And there are some things, there are some strategies dealing with pets and the remains of pets and everything that comes with that. That's really difficult to develop an implementation strategy that Story County can positively affect. And it's beyond the scope of really what we felt was something could make a difference. It would make a difference, but that Story County could manage. So items like that just didn't make their way onto the assessment. Same with like raccoons and different, you know, non-domestic animals. There's some strategies in here that are recommended that we just couldn't logically make that progression into here. So again, why it was excluded, and if we did exclude it, and we'll make a list internally and get that back out. The Conservation Board did raise a question as to who prioritized the high, medium, low in the draft matrix. That was done by staff, and we just kind of all came together and said, yeah, that's a high, that's a medium, that's a low. But I think what would really help it if we had criteria for what was low, medium, high threshold. And so that's part of our follow-up work we'll do. The next steps, and then we can go through the matrix and answering questions. We would like you all to consider a joint meeting with the Conservation Board at the end of November, if that would be an opportunity, to get together with that entity again. You received the report, the introduction to the report with them, so we thought it was a great, great way to go forward. We've identified the possible day of Tuesday, November 27th. And then following that, if action is taken, it'll go to the Board of Supervisors. Actually, next Tuesday, the Board may be receiving an update. I actually forgot to put this on the agenda, so hopefully I can. Yeah. Again, update before the board. They did get a copy of the memo and all the materials that were sent to you and the Conservation Board. Throwing a lot out at you.
Is the November 27th, is that then for sure? That's the date you want to do this?
That's what we're throwing out for you.
Okay, are you looking at what time of day?
Like 5. Like a 5 to 7 or 5:30 to 7.
I won't be able to make that.
It's the day after my birthday, so I expect cake.
You're lucky it's only cake.
That's what I found. I'm like, okay, I can probably do that.
You probably can do that.
I can do 5 that day.
And how the Conservation Board is handling that, as individual members, they're going to go through the survey questions. They're going to go through the matrix using the same survey questions. And if you're not able to be at the meeting, share that with the chair of the commission or the Conservation Board. Because we had one member of the Conservation Board that could not make it as well.
Will it be here?
To be determined, it might be at McFarland Park.
How about in Darien?
You know, I love coming up to Darien, PJ.
Just throw that.
We'll let you know. But does that seem like that date will work, that we could go forward?
It could be a challenge for me, but it seems like the majority of the group.
Yeah. I won't know until the end of the week.
Okay. That's 2 maybes and 1 no. Does the Conservation Commission, have they already had a shot at determining a date or suggesting a date?
We threw the 27th out to them as well as, like we are to you.
Mm-hmm.
Just knowing it was easier to come up with a date and have people respond to that than trying to do a doodle poll and going down that path.
Yeah.
Start with that.
Yeah.
Tentatively, also, we'd like to get this before the Board of Supervisors in December.
Yeah. Our marching orders did have this going back to the Board of Supervisors in the early part of December. For one very important reason, the county starts planning for fiscal year 20 budgeting. Right now, in fact, and budgets are due for the first week of December to start getting pulled together in packets, and so we can do work sessions in January. If there are any budget impacts, staff resources, purchases, whatever it may be for the implementation of this, we should be identifying them now.
Could I ask another question?
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready to have this meeting, or do you need to do more staff work before you're prepared?
I think we're ready to do it.
Maybe it could be earlier then. That's 1, 2, 3 weeks from now.
We have Thanksgiving week in there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I couldn't do it then, but next
throws
week.
It all off.
Do you have publication requirements for this?
Let me know.
I'm not available next week, probably, to do it.
I'm not either. I'm in D.C.
We're going to know who we have for the meeting.
And Jerry did just correct me. He said there would be no requirements. So
there would be.
He just said that.
Yeah. If we take action on a meeting tonight, do I need to take it on a particular date, or can we just agree to a joint meeting and you can send out a poll or whatever to get the date that works best for everybody?
And I can follow up with everyone towards the end of the week. Jonathan, you for sure are out.
Yeah, I have something Tuesday nights.
Yeah.
5.
Maybe we can frame a motion just as agreeing to a joint meeting with the Conservation Board in late November, final date to be determined.
Yeah, I'm out of state the 28th through December 2nd, so anything during that time range would be without me, which would be better.
No. No. I'll just try to make it work. We arranged the other one off.
I'll work with Stephanie to
send an email.
Send an email to all of you and shoot for the 27th, but then if we need to be some flexibility, figure it out.
Is that the action you need from us tonight? It's just agreeing to a joint meeting?
Mm-hmm.
With
and
a
any
loose time
feedback
frame?
You have on right now the matrix that you'd like to see us as your preliminary review, hey, this caught my eye, any clarification you need. And then, like I said, the next iteration you'll see, there'll be threshold for the criteria and then an idea of what we excluded, what we felt just didn't rise to the level being included in this matrix. Not saying at this point in time. Not saying it should never be included.
Do you have a date by which you would prefer to have input if we can't give it to you tonight? I'm not prepared tonight. Doesn't matter.
I can be flexible.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Why don't we get the action out of the way? Is there anyone who'd like to make a motion about a joint meeting in late November or early December?
I would move that we accept the proposal for a joint meeting with Conservation Commission late November or early December to review the watershed implementation work.
Is there a second?
Second.
A motion by Merck and a second by McBride. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, same sign. Very good. Now, general questions about the matrix that's in front of you or the study in general that you'd like to direct to Leanne right now?
Is there a reason why, like, the cost of each item is not at least, like, a draft version of the costs, or and then a time horizon?
Yeah, the time horizon, and this is kind of a practice that we started with the adoption strategic plan. A lot of these, without knowing to whom responsibility will ultimately lie, we felt it not appropriate to put the time horizon in. I'm going to just convene. We'll take 1.2, floodplain ordinance modification. If we put in that time frame, that 1 to 2 years, we're still trying to decide where floodplain management is going ultimately rest in Story County. And we also know we have new maps coming our way, so that time horizon has to be very flexible. So we purposefully left out the time horizon so that they could be programmed into individual department office work programs if it's an action step that Story County is going to take to implement. So that goes back to that big question. We don't know where this responsibility ultimately is going to lie, that big picture item. Who's going to be doing this at the county?
Which one were you talking about in particular?
The overall goal on the very top.
Okay.
Do you have a time horizon for the matrix as a whole? For, you know, what how far out are we looking?
Yeah, I think ultimately, since it'll be part of the CTC implementation matrix, we'll follow those guidelines.
Okay.
And build it right into there. Once we get solidified that these are the action steps that the county feels are appropriate to be built in. And see how it, and at that point, the Board of Supervisors needs to have a very candid discussion as to where the priorities will lie then, too, because there's already a lot of stuff on the implementation matrix for the C2C plan. And on the budgeting, at this point, I only know that we can start beginning to assign some preliminary figures.
Well, even knowing where the funding sources are going to come from to just having some ballpark ideas, even for the supervisors to have a quick look at what's this going to cost and where are the potential sources for funding for these activities.
It goes back to that big picture. We don't know where it's going. Who's going to babysit this? Who's going to ultimately, is this going to be a county run and managed, I don't want to say program, but does this rest with the county? Does it rest with an outside entity? Is it a hybrid of an approach? Now, we've never gone down this road of watershed management to this degree. And so, honestly, if you look at our staffing resources right now, we don't have the ability to do this. And so that's that big question.
But I think that's why you start identifying where, you know, you have the responsible party here, but why not say funding, even if you put potential funding sources so it's not set in stone, just so that you start to think about where you're going to put this together.
Yeah, we can, as a working group, we can try to put some together. There's going to be a lot of blanks or a lot of TBDs to be determined. And that was one thing we didn't want to have a lot of TBDs in here.
I hate to argue, but I mean, then why even?
No, I understand. I understand hardly what you're saying.
If it's just like, oh, this feels good, you know, what's the practicality of it?
Keep in mind, this is part of that outline.
I don't think they know yet.
Yeah, we have no idea.
I mean, if you're saying things like we need to determine the thresholds for the criteria, depending on where this goes or who winds up doing it, are we talking hours? Are we talking feet of trenching? What are we talking here? I mean, I don't even know if that applies, but at this point, I don't think they know.
There are some, I mean, to get to Jonathan's point, there are some things, floodplain ordinance modification. Based on past practice, I could come up with something like that. But there are some that the source water protection plans back on the last page, 2.16, established source water protection plans. I don't even know where we could.
I think that if you could put in the information that you can give, and let me just call it an educated guess on, in terms of estimates, that might be helpful to people. And I really understand that there's going to be some of those would be just so wild that you wouldn't be able to. But first, the educated guesses from the kind of work you've done before. And secondly, I think developing the criteria for low, medium, and high prioritization would be really important, because then people get a sense of urgency or not and why. And I think that would help the next step people focus in. So this is a lot of work, I agree. But
the low, medium, high was a no-brainer because the four of us have worked so much on the C2C plan.
Okay.
And yeah, so we kind of have a sense, I think we all automatically go to how we prioritize those actions. Mm-hmm. And didn't really stop, we need to have criteria to develop that. Mm-hmm. We can do that.
Yeah, I'm sure that you guys can. I wouldn't question the prioritizations you would do, but in terms of other people looking at this,
I think it'd be a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Then you'd save yourself a lot of questions. Why didn't you do that? Well, if the definition is there, people would understand why you did that.
Yeah, as long as you guys are aware, there's going to be a lot of TBDs if we include budgets and not knowing if those are possibly 5-year plan horizon.
I would just put the word estimated
right
on there.
And that's what we do with our CIP, and we do potential funding sources in our CIP, so it's not an uncommon practice. Yep.
Does this take in consideration the county tiles?
Yes.
Yes.
Because there's some, okay.
Those that we know of.
Yeah, well, there's a hole on Highway 30, yeah, right now with a county tile that a combine fell in, and they're 100 years old, some of them. So I was wondering, because that's going to be an expensive deal.
Yeah, that's one of two capital improvements, 3.1 drainage ditches.
Are there any other questions for Leanne or the staff? Okay. You have everything you need from us, Leanne?
I believe I do. I will follow up. If it's okay, Jerry, I'll work with Stephanie to maybe get emails and get the date set. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leanne.
Thanks.
All right, so we're going to move on to our public hearings for tonight. Our first one is Conditional Use Permit 10-17, Pleasant Grove Community Church Accessory Structure and Parking Areas. And Emily is not going to be handling this one.
She is not.
All right.
You got me on this one.
All right.
Item 7.1, it's Conditional Use Permit 10-17, Pleasant Grove Community Church. Applicant is Jerry Nelson, representative from the church. He lives in Ames. The church is located at 56971 170th Street. The nature of the request is a new conditional use permit application. It actually involves a proposed accessory structure, 1,800 square foot, and also includes proposed parking south of the proposed building and on the south side of where the church is located. The proposed building will have running water, restrooms, kitchen for normal church-related functions, which will be typically used for weddings, funerals, potlucks, and ice cream socials, is what they're intending. And as I mentioned, it also includes proposed parking, which would be south of the proposed building and on the south side of the road right-of-way. I want to thank Jerry and his board. We've had quite a few reviews since the initial submittal several months ago. We have been working through issues involving the proposed use of the building, as well as parking status. For the most part, parking has occurred within the road right-of-way. And with this project, we have an opportunity to provide safety for motorists and for those that use the church in locating on-site parking spaces. So the location is Milford Township. We're in the northwest corner of the township on the west side of I-35. It's about 3.5 miles north of Ames, 3.75 miles east of the city of Gilbert. So this is part of the site plan, showed you the improvement areas. Again, it includes a proposed accessory building by 1,800 square feet, proposed parking to the south. The existing church is located in this area. The parcel is about a 2-acre parcel, irregular shaped. Again, it's on the north side of 170th Street. The property has an existing access for the Story County Conservation use. They have like a 38-acre parcel to the north that they were granted access for. So they are to construct the access and the 5 parking spots to the east, which is shown right here. The proposed parking for the church would be, again, on the south side of the church. And also on the south side of the road right-of-way. They're acquiring about 3/4 acre. There would be about 26 parking stalls with that. They're also planting about 25,000 square foot of natural grass, prairie grasses surrounding it, and then about 5 or 6 trees along the north side of that parking spot. For a buffer, which is a part of the landscape requirement for the parking spaces. This shows you property in proximity to adjacent uses. We're in an A1 agricultural district. Believe it or not, that's actually green to the west and northwest, which is a greenbelt conservation district. You have to take access to this property. Is about 1/4 mile west of 570th Avenue. The access is off of 190th Street. You travel about 2 miles to the north to 170th Street and then to the west. And again, the property is on the north side of the road. This is the configuration of the property. And as I said, it's about 2 acres, irregular shaped. Church is on the south portion of the site. The Milford Township Cemetery is to the north. There are a couple of single-family dwellings, one to the southeast, one to the northwest. Future land use, for the most part, is rural residential, which is yellow. Where the dwellings are located, there is an overlay of natural area. Much of the area will not be impacted by natural areas. You'll see from the site photos that there's actually a clearing area where the majority of the building and the parking area will be located on the north side of the road. So a little history. The church was constructed in 1873. without amenities. There is no running water, restrooms, or septic system. They have an outhouse facility that they use on the west side of the church. It is on the National Register of Historic Places and was placed there in 2011. Church membership ranges from anywhere from 20 to 25 people. As I mentioned, the church does provide access through an easement, 20-foot wide easement from the road right away through this property. And a part of that is that the conservationists construct the access and install five of those parking spaces. The driveway and eastern five parking spaces will be constructed by the conservation, as I mentioned. There's also a 20-foot wide easement that extends westerly from the conservation to the cemetery. As I mentioned, much of the parking has occurred within the road right-of-way, and from looking at aerials, it looks like some of those spaces were actually partially or very close to the actual road surface itself. When we received this submittal, there was concern raised by the county engineer about the use of the road right-of-way for parking. So this is an opportunity to provide safety measures for motorists and for those that use the church to provide the off-street parking. Again, this shows you the church. That's a purple line, which is the north right-of-way line of Northwest or 170th Street. And the white area represents gravel that they put down for parking. So everything south of this line would be part of that road right away. So they're proposing 13 spaces with the parking on the north side of the road. They will be ADA handicap accessible. There'll be four of those. They're providing paved surface for three of those. There'll be a 6-foot wide sidewalk that will extend from the building and the parking area on the north side to the church, so that they'll have a solid route to the church building. This just shows you some detail of the accessory building, again about 1,800 square feet, the handicap accessible, ADA accessible spaces will be for the western portion. And then you see part of that sidewalk, which will extend westerly to the building. And then again, to the east will be the spaces that will be installed by the conservation staff. And then they're showing a couple of trees as well. Again, 26 stalls on the south side. They're acquiring about 3/4 acre. Prairie grasses will be surrounding it. And then there's 6 trees proposed on the north side of the parking. These are the side photos. We're looking to the north. This is the front of the church. This is looking west along 170th Street. It's gravel road. Looking east. This is looking to the northwest toward the cemetery and church. This is looking at the area where the parking will be and accessory structure. You see there's somewhat of a clearing in here. Looking back to the west, again back to the west again, you see the church and the cemetery. Looking south toward 170th Street, proposed access to the parking area. This is looking across the street at the proposed area for the south parking lot, 26 stalls. Conditional use permits require that we review standards of approval. The first thing that we have to look at are compatibility. Again, the church has been in this location for nearly 150 years. Churches may be approved, or improvements for churches may be approved through the conditional use permit process in an A1 district. All proposed setbacks will be met under the county's land development regulations. We are to look at transition, this site to the adjacent sites. There are numerous trees buffering where the building and the parking will be on the north side. The cemetery does provide some buffering to the dwelling to the west. The proposed parking area to the south will include the native grasses that I mentioned and the trees. Traffic is approximately 120 average annual daily. That's from the Iowa DOT. The church is not anticipating great increases in numbers with this project, so the levels will not likely increase. But again, the goal is to provide improvements in safety with motorists using the road and those that use the church. Parking and loading, as we mentioned, there was a concern about the use of the right-of-way for parking. This is an opportunity to provide the off-street parking and the ADA accessible spaces and signage. Signage and lighting, no additional signage is proposed. They are proposing two lights where the parking space will be on the north side of the road. And again, they'll need to meet the county's requirements for lighting. Environmental protection, there's a 20% green space landscape requirement, which they're showing. They're providing that 25,000 square foot of grasses, plus the tree requirement, which is really part of the parking requirement. They also will demonstrate that they're meeting the Iowa Stormwater Management Manual and SUDIS requirements for erosion control. They will be providing a permit to the Environmental Health Department and meeting their requirements. And then if an acre or over an acre is impacted, graded, they'll have to apply for a state NPDES permit, National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit. And then if all those items are met, you are to look at these additional items, whether or not it will adequately or will not adequately safeguard the health, safety, and general welfare of persons residing or working in adjoining or surrounding property, what the impact to light and air is, whether or not it will increase congestion in the roads or cause hazards from fire, flood, or similar dangers, impact to property values, and then whether or not it's in accordance to the intent of the county's land development regulations and C2C plan. We did have interagency review comments June 22 of 2017. Also had, as I said, we've had a lot of communication with the applicant, with board members, planning staff, and the county engineer with regard to the parking and use of the building. We believe those issues have been addressed with this submittal. The notices were sent to adjacent property owners within a quarter mile, October 31st. We also communicated with Iowa Regional Utilities Association, Midland Power Co-op, Nevada Fire, Maryland Greeley Ambulance, and Nevada Fire Department did communicate that they will need to inspect the accessory building with regard to state fire code requirements. And then planning and development staff did receive comment April 3 from an adjacent landowner with regard to the project in support. So points to consider: accessory building will allow Pleasant Grove Church to host normal church functions and provide needed amenities. As we mentioned, the existing church does not have a lot of the basic amenities, so they'll have that ability with this addition. We'll also provide the on-site parking, which will provide improvements to the area for motorists and users of the church, so there's the safety factor. The again, the conservation will be installing the access in five of those spaces along the east on the north side of the road. And this brings us to our recommendation, which is approval. We're recommending approval with really some basic conditions. The use of the proposed accessory structure shall be for normal church functions. The applicant must follow the conditional use permit completion standards, which are identified in Chapter 90.05, again, which really talks about the project being completed within 5 years. They have to have substantial action. within a year. We're asking for inspections, which again is the standard practice of our department. And then again, they'll need to obtain a state NPDES permit if there's impact to the site over an acre. So that brings us to the recommendation, which is, again, approval with conditions, which is number two. Story County Planning and Zoning Commission recommends approval of the conditional use permit for the Pleasant Grove Community Church as put forth in CUP 10-17 with conditions, and directs staff to place the case on the Board of Adjustment for their November 28th. That was moved because of Thanksgiving, so November 28th, 2018. Be happy to answer your questions.
Commission, any questions for the staff? The easement that's on the site is an access. I just want to be clear, because the language can be kind of confusing. It's an access easement granted to the Story County Conservation, not a conservation easement that would limit development
public
in some
access.
Way other than just the access strip.
It's for public access to get to their conservation ground to the north.
So acres. One of your comments mentioned the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, which is usually engaged to oversee a conservation easement that limits the use and development of the property. Do you know what the relationship is there?
Not 100%. This action, this conservation, the Heritage, Natural Heritage Foundation was involved in this right when I was starting, in August of 2015. But I believe there's members of the church here that might be able to explain that a little more.
Right. Any other questions? Okay. We'd love to give the applicant an opportunity to speak. Would you mind stepping up to the podium?
Sure.
And just giving us your name and address for the record.
Over here?
That one right there. Should have a microphone that's working.
All right. My name is Alan Thompson, and I'm sorry that Jerry wasn't going to be able to be here. I'm kind of the second person, so you're going to have to deal with the B team. When we purchased the land, it came with an easement from the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, and it's a rather restrictive easement. It doesn't allow for very many different types of developments on this. But it does allow us to do this. And so we can't clear off a whole bunch of the land. We can't use it for logging. We can't graze animals on it. It's a very restrictive covenant because the land came burdened with this. And as a church, we don't really have any problems with this.
Ultimately, this would be between the church and the Natural Heritage Foundation.
Yes.
But I'm just curious. So there are several conservation-oriented restrictions on the property, but using it for parking in a new structure is not one of those limitations.
Right.
So when you can't clear timber, but you can put a parking lot.
Right. When we purchased it from the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, we purchased it with the idea that this was what we were going to do. We had these plans to start with. We made sure that this was in our contract, that we could do this. And so this part of it is
so you reserved that right?
Yes.
That helps me a lot. Thank you.
Amelia graciously pulled the staff report in.
There's an easement agreement that Emily included in as one of the documents on the agenda center. If you want to look at it too, if you've got.
I'm okay.
Yeah,
they're supposed to review any.
Sorry, it's very small on here.
On the property, and they have done that.
They've done that. They approved the master plan.
Ultimately, to me, it's an agreement between two private parties, but it usually indicates distinct conservation objective for the property. It has to meet conservation value. So I just wanted to ask a few questions about it. Is that all you'd like to say about the application? Otherwise, we might have a couple questions for you, if that's all right.
I don't have any more to say.
Okay. Any questions for the applicant?
right, thank you.
Thank you.
Some might pop up along the way. We'll see.
I don't have a question, but I have something to say.
Okay. Yep. We'll get to the discussion here in a moment.
Is there anyone in attendance tonight who would like to address the commission regarding this proposal, either for or against, or drop a comment? Okay. Then we will close the public hearing portion of this agenda item. Discussion. PJ.
Well, actually, this is wonderful. So it made my heart sing to see an organization that's kind of plan and that's able to grow and improve. So we have it.
Any questions, comments, discussion, or a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I would move to accept condition use permit 10-17 using alternate number 2.
Second. We have a motion by Cable and a second by Sherwood to advance a recommendation for adoption. Staff recommendation for alternative number 2. Could be a roll call.
Yes. Yes.
I'm sorry, can I interrupt for just a second? I always forget to do this, but is there any discussion on that motion?
Well, I'm looking at the Eastern Street, and there's a clause in it. Clause 3, and I don't know if the clause is this. Maybe it's something about, maybe it's what's already been done. Should buyer elect to place a parking area on the middle stage to show the construction use maintenance and repair of the parking area in Story County as successors and signs on the following terms?
Mm-hmm.
Are you hearing what I'm saying?
I'm not exactly sure what question you're asking.
Well, are the costs of the county, is this about something that's done before, or is, because it starts to say, Story County shall pay for and install a gravel drive in a lot with 4 or 5 parking spaces. That's what's already been done.
No, it has not been done.
Could you back us up to the site plan, please?
Mm-hmm. This is the access to, on the south side of the road, the access to the Story County parking spaces that the Conservation Commission will be right here. And it's better parking spaces at the trailhead. There's, they're going to develop a parking space right, or a driveway right there, and Story County Conservation Commission will have these 5 spaces as trailhead parking spaces.
Okay. So they have, and not irresponsible to their budget, they have in their budget to install this driveway.
Yes. Well, I know nothing whatsoever about what the Conservation Commission has in their budget. I know they agreed to do it.
The staff report says Pleasant Grove Church has partnered with Story County Conservation to provide a 20-foot-wide access easement and located to the north and 5 parking spaces for public access. So partnered is the word that Emily used, if that's helpful.
So then are you concerned about the coordination? The access to the church's new lot with access to the...
They're going to have to work together. They're going to have to work together with the church.
Any other discussion on the motion? Then we need to be reminded of the motion. Okay. Then let's go ahead and roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
McBride.
Yes.
Sherwood.
Yes.
Cable.
Yes.
Murphy.
Very good. You have a positive recommendation. Moving on to the Board of Supervisors. Thank you.
Which Board of Adjustment?
Board of Adjustment. Thanks, Terry.
It's okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Then, since we moved 7.2 to the end of the public hearings, so we're going to move on to the original 7.3, which is use permit 09-18. Chumlin Dog Breeding.
Yeah, so this is a dog breeding conditional use permit. There's a dog boarding conditional use permit on the agenda tonight as well. And so it's the same conditional use permit for dog breeding, boarding, raising. So that's what both of these agenda items fall under.
Just a note, I think if you have over four dogs, you're considered to be one of these uses. So, you know, tonight with this application and the other application, you'll see that one's proposing 14, one's proposing 15. So those are only really 10 or 11 more dogs than would be permitted, just for personal use without needing this conditional use permit. So this is the vicinity map. We're by McCallsburg. So about 3/4 of a mile straight to the northeast. It is a dog breeding use. It's SZ Rolling Acres. They were established in 2017, and they breed Pomskies, which is a mix of Huskies and Pomeranians. And there are 14 adults proposed as the maximum. The conditional use permit, again, there's a conditional use permit required for dog breeding. We also have standards, though, that the animal control officer would enforce in Chapter 45 of the Code of Ordinances. So those are things such as making sure the appropriate licenses from the state or federal government are obtained, and standards relating to air temperature and ventilation, adequate space for exercise, waste, noise, minimum levels of care, those kinds of things. And they also require that the animal control officer be granted reasonable access for inspection to the property in addition to state or federal inspectors. So the Department of Agricultural and Land Stewardship has a current license on this business, and the applicant has provided the inspection reports from those, and they were included in the materials on the agenda center. Their permit also requires that there are two caretakers, and there's a main caretaker who's the applicant and another caretaker that both reside on the property. No sales take place on this property due to the safety of the residents and the dogs and health of the dogs, so all sales take place off-site. Other caretaking activities include cleaning the kennels twice a day, feeding the dogs twice a day. Waste is spread on a horse pasture that's on the property. The kennels are scrubbed a little bit more thoroughly weekly with something called Odoban. And I think oils are used, essential oils, to keep flies away and help with the smell. And the applicant also proposes to plant grasses around the area where the kennels are located. There's an existing rock area to help with drainage as well, but they'll be adding some grasses to meet landscaping requirements that are landscaping requirements. So the site currently has two buildings used for dog breeding. One's more of a lean-to where the kennels are located, as well as dog houses, and one is a 15 by 12 foot fully insulated building that's used for the puppies. So the lean-to has runs inside of it in addition to the dog houses. They're 5 foot by 10 foot, and they include weatherproof dog houses. I have a picture here in just a second, so you can see what they look like. But they're sealed and tinned, and they match the other buildings on the property. You know, they're aesthetically look pretty nice. And there is a proposed new building that's proposed to connect to these runs to allow the dogs access to the indoor area from the kennels and the runs. And then the puppies will be moved to this new building as well. It will be fully insulated and will match the other buildings on the property. So this is the site. It's a kind of a wider view. The property is about 3.42 acres. This is the horse pasture. This is the dwelling. This is the building used for puppies currently, and that will be moved. So this is the lean-to that the kennels are in. And
the new building will attach to the lean-to by access to the property. So zooming in again, the building is
new building. It's just an approximation that I did, so it's not the exact dimensions. And then the runs. So they'll connect here. Adjacent properties are mainly large agricultural parcels. There is a dwelling on this one to the northeast. That dwelling is over 15,000 feet from the lean-to with the runs and that in it. There's a 200-foot setback required from property lines where residences are located, and so they're exceeding that by about 200 feet. So there's a 400-foot setback from this actual property line to that kennel. A 50-foot setback is also required from all other property lines. So the north, what direction is that? West and south property lines. And they are meeting or exceeding that with all of the buildings, including the proposed building. It is designated as rural residential on the C2C plan future land use map. Again, all adjacent properties are designated as agricultural conservation areas. And these are some site photos. So looking west on 120th Street, there's the agricultural land across the street. This is looking west on 120th Street. You can see the dwelling with this windbreak, the treed area, just to the northeast. This is southeast. So this is the property to the south. There are some grain bins located on this property, but it is an agricultural production. This is the dog kennels. You can see this existing rock area that drains them. Another photo from the east, you can see the insulated dog houses better. And this is, it's hard to see here, there's kind of a glare, but this is the, they're starting to do grading for the new building. So this is, it'll be on this side of the existing kennels to connect to those kennels. So standards of approval, we have standards for compatibility, first off. Just noting that, you know, having a pole barn, a lean-to, those are pretty typical buildings to have in an agricultural setting. They could be reused if the property was ever sold. It's not atypical for the character of the area. There may be noise or odor impacts. However, the closest dwelling is 15,000 feet approximately away. And they meet all of the required setbacks for this kind of use from property lines as well. However, in addition to the buffers provided by distance to other properties, we are recommending a condition that the maximum number of adult dogs permitted is 14. The applicant indicates that this is their personal maximum as well. For transition, again, all properties are large agricultural parcels, but the applicant is proposing to plant grasses around the new building and lean-to to provide additional screening to the south. Traffic, no sales take place on the property, so it's not anticipated that any traffic will occur beyond that typical of a dwelling. No, again, with parking, no sales take place on the property, so there's no parking proposed. There's no signs or lighting proposed. For environmental protection, again, we have potential impacts from noise and odor. So in addition to that recommendation on the maximum number of dogs permitted of 14, they are taking steps to clean the kennels twice a day and then more thoroughly scrub them weekly. They do provide drainage and are adding landscaping. And the new building that they're providing for the dogs will be fully insulated with that insulation and blown-in insulation in the ceiling. If you conclude all of those standards are met, you must recommend approval of the application unless you conclude that if completed as proposed, there's a strong probability the development will not adequately safeguard health and welfare, impair air and light, and unduly increase congestion in roads, or diminish property values, or not be in accordance with our C2C plan. Just a few points on these because I know we've already gone over a lot of them. Assessor's office raised no concerns on property values. And on our C2C plan, the principles for the rural residential designation include that making sure development is sensitive to the rural area and provides adequate buffers. And so, again, a 50-foot setback is required from all property lines, except for residential property lines where a 200-foot setback is required. And these setbacks are met. And they are greater than would typically be required for an accessory building. We routed this for comments to our interagency review team. Our department had a question about if there was a maximum number of dogs permitted by the license through the state of Iowa. There isn't. And then Environmental Health asked about wastewater generation in any of the buildings, which there will not be. We also sent public notices on the 30th and received no comments, and we provided notice to the city of McCallsburg because they are within 2 miles. So again, points to consider, there are separate standards for private kennels in the Code of Ordinances that the Animal Control Officer enforces, and the Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship does license this business as well. All adjacent properties are large agricultural parcels, with the exception of one dwelling to the northeast. All setbacks from these properties are met. The buildings are typical of pole barns or lean-tos frequently found on other acreages in the county. The new building for the dogs will be insulated. No sales take place on the property. The kennels are scooped and cleaned twice daily. And there is drainage provided around the kennels, with additional grasses proposed as landscaping. The applicant indicates that the dogs do occasionally bark, but they do listen to commands and have bark collars if necessary. And we are recommending a condition to limit the maximum number of adult dogs to 14. And this is only 10 more dogs than would be permitted if you had four dogs and didn't need to get a conditional use permit for this kind of use. So again, we're recommending just one condition, which is maximum number of dogs is permitted as 14, and that would be alternative 2. So recommending the conditional use permit for dog breeding with a maximum of 14 dogs. Any questions for me?
Can you talk about the application of the waste on the horse pasture, that process, and how we can ensure that the water quality will not be contaminated?
Yeah, we routed it to the Environmental Health Department just to review that, and they didn't really have any comments on that.
Doesn't even, not even a blip on the radar compared to the the livestock waste that's already applied to large fields all over. We don't have any streams nearby.
There might be like a drainage way here, but the pasture is located on this side of the property. This is a grassed area as well by those grain bins. It's not in production. So there's a drainage way. It, like, I was fall, so I can't tell.
Any other questions
for the staff? It's in section 14 in the northeast of the very northeast corner of section 14 in Warren Township.
Staff, and we'll ask the applicant if they'd like to address the commission. The applicant here tonight. Even if you feel like there's nothing else to be added, we may have a question or two for you.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Any comments you'd like to make?
Hi, I'm Seth, or I'm Ken Tadian. This is Seth Chumlin. We're the applicants here. If you guys have any questions, just let us know.
I have a question.
Yeah.
When you say there's no on-site sales, so people don't come out and look at these dogs and say, I want that one?
That is correct, yes. We meet in a public area. Reasoning being...
No.
No, it is not.
I don't care. Why wouldn't you just sell the dogs to people that...
Yeah, so more or less, I guess I can give a good example for you. Actually, just happened recently. So I'm a good friends with a good breeder in Oklahoma and in Utah. And one of the breeders in Oklahoma had purchased from this breeder in... Okay, so parvo is very bad. I'm sure you guys know about it. And this breeder who... Okay, I'm so sorry. I gotta start over. Oh my goodness.
Really?
Yeah, so, I'm sorry. Okay, he can talk.
So all of her sales are done. So she sends weekly videos and pictures to buyers on the list of people that are interested in buying, and that is how they pick. Instead of coming out to someone's house and looking at dogs, like that's how I did it when we grew up. You know, you go to someone's house, you look at the dogs, you pick out which one you want. Instead of doing that, it's all email, pictures, videos. That way we don't have people coming to the property, say if they have a dog at home, if it's sick or whatever, we don't have anybody bringing, kind of like hog stows, you don't have anybody outside bringing in disease that would affect our dogs.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's really sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty bad. Thank you.
Any questions there? 14 dogs, you're okay with that?
Yeah, that's our maximum. That's correct.
And this is cross between what and what?
The Pomeranian and Siberian Husky makes the Pomsies.
Huskies are very vocal.
They are very vocal. Yeah, and that's why you cross them with the Pomeranian to kind of tame down all of the extremes of the Husky.
I have to tell you, initially, I'm a tremendous pet lover.
Yeah.
You know, there's all these
mutts
that need to be
taken
care
of.
Absolutely. But if I have a particular living situation, a lot of times you need to pick and choose what kind of dog you can put in there. Mm-hmm. That sounds like a pretty nice, kind of cute, size right, you know, personality wise. And I would bring in.
Yeah.
Thank you. Is there anyone here who'd like to comment on this application? Okay, then you will close the public hearing. Is there any commission or any commission discussion or motions?
Mr. Chairman, I will move to approve to conditional use permit 09-18, bar number 2. We have a motion by Cable, a second by Menz. Is there any discussion on the motion?
Merkin. Yes. McBride.
Yes.
Menz.
Yes.
Sherwin.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Cable.
Yes.
Okay.
Your application before the City Board of Adjustment. Thanks for the positive recommendation. Thanks for coming in. We're on to consideration of conditional use permit 10-18, Onkin for dog boarding. Amelia.
Yes. So this one is dog boarding. So that would be, you know, longer overnight. And also it's dog daycare. So we don't specifically in the ordinance call out a difference between dog boarding and dog daycare, but this will have both. In the immediate future, just dog daycare, eventually boarding as well. So we are located just to the east of Slater on Highway 210. You know, this being located on a major thoroughfare highway in Story County, I just pulled some traffic counts for reference. So in between Slater's corporate boundaries and 520th Avenue, which is the stretch on which the subject property is located, there's about 2,990 average annual daily traffic counts. Or cars. So that's, you know, a pretty highly trafficked area already. It is paved, it's Highway 210. So this use is just proposed to, you know, kind of take advantage of that location that is heavily trafficked and pretty accessible from 35 and other major areas and roadways in the county. So this is Dog District LLC is the name. Again, it's daycare and boarding services. So the maximum number of dogs proposed is 15. I talked to the applicant about that as well, and we kind of worked out that number. It is recommended as a condition, like in the last proposal. So in this case, because they are a new use, they don't have the permits yet from the Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship or USDA. And so if the conditional use is approved, they will they will then apply for those permits. So they are still required, like in the last case. They just haven't obtained them yet because the use hasn't been approved yet. And again, we do have other requirements in the Code of Ordinances under animal control for this use as well, the same ones required for dog breeding regarding air temperature and ventilation and adequate space and those kinds of things. So in addition to the applicant who will reside on the property, there are other trained caretakers as required by those permits that they'll have to obtain as well. The caretaker activities will include supervising the dogs during the day, and they will actually be composting the waste before applying it to a friend's field. And they will follow USDA guidelines for composting waste. There's an existing building on the property that's proposed to be used. It's a building with an addition on it. So the original building is 46 feet by 48 feet. It's located 25 feet from the west property line and south of the dwelling. There is a 50-foot setback required, so it doesn't meet that required setback. The Board of Adjustment will review that variance request at their meeting at the same time as they review the conditional use permit request. The Planning and Zoning Commission doesn't make recommendations on variances, so that's why you're not seeing that one tonight, just on conditional use permits. So with that building, the applicant did submit an interior sketch showing kennels to be constructed, 12 total kennels for boarding dogs. Those will be located at the building's south end. The building is insulated except for that south end, and so the applicant proposes to not board any dogs until that insulation is done on that south end, and we are recommending that as a condition. There is an addition that provides garage space and an office space on the north side of the existing building. It's 24 feet by 48 feet, and there are several sets of overhead doors that provide access to the kennel area as well as the garage, and there is a main entrance door through the garage. This is the interior plan. Sorry, I'll just try to point out generally on here. So this is the office. This is the northern addition. So there's an office in here. And there's also this garage. And then the kennels are located at the south end. And otherwise, there's just an overhead door into this area. There will be a fenced area coming off of the building, off of the overhead door, to provide access in and out for the dogs. The area to the east of the overhead doors on the site is paved already, and there is additional gravel. So they will be using that area for parking. There's three spaces proposed, and staff has reviewed the proposed location of the spaces to ensure there's sufficient space for an aisle for cars to come in and pull out as well. Again, fencing is proposed on the east and south side of the building, so it will extend east and then south. The northernmost section of fencing will be a privacy fence to provide screening from Highway 210. The rest of it will be chain link and 6 foot in height. The variance request will include the fence, as the applicant would like to provide as much space as possible for the dogs and extend the fence to be in line with the building, so at a 25-foot setback. Again, a 50-foot setback is required, so it's part of the variance request. And they are proposing landscaping on the north and the east side of the fencing, as well as around the compost area, and they're working with a landscape designer on that. So this is the building that's proposed to be used. You can see the dwelling is located here. This is the site plan. They also submitted one on Beacon, so that kind of shows the fencing as it comes to the east of the building and down around onto this side of the building to be in line. There's a 25-foot setback here again. And then the parking area would be in this area. So back to the site plan. The parking area is here. Here's the dwelling. And then this site plan does show landscaping on this side, as well as the compost area being located just to the south of the fence, and then additional landscaping by the compost area. So the property to the north, we're talking about surrounding land use now, does contain a dwelling. It also has some area and agricultural production. This dwelling does meet the required 200-foot setback from the building that's proposed to be used. So it's about 210 feet from the building to the property line. The dwelling is more like 300 feet from the building. The properties to the west and south are large agricultural parcels over 35 acres. And the property to the east is also over 35 acres in agricultural production. The property to the east does have the farmstead divided out, and so there is a dwelling located about 460 feet to the east as well. But again, there's just a 200-foot setback from residential properties, so that, again, is met. And then there are 10 dwellings located between the city of Slater and the subject property on Highway 210. So this is kind of a broader view. So you can see the dwelling right across the street and then one closer to the east, but not adjacent. And then this is the agricultural area that surrounds it on all other sides. And this is the CTC future land use map. So you can see there is some residential uses, again about 10, in between the subject property located here and the city of Slater. This is looking southeast at the building. And here's the building and the dwelling. This is looking west at the building, so you can see the overhead doors. So this part, again, would be used for the garage. This is the entrance. And then this area would be enclosed by the fence to allow access for the dogs. This is looking northwest at the building and dwelling. This is looking east. So again, that's the tree break for the dwelling to the east. Or the windbreak, excuse me. And this is looking east at Highway 210. This is looking north across Highway 210 to the parcel with a dwelling. And then on to standards of approval. There's a lot of similarities with the last one and this one. You know, it's similar utility buildings that are being used that are pretty typical for farmsteads in the county. On this one, they are proposing to fully insulate the whole building. There's just the south side that needs to be insulated still. And they'll do that prior to boarding dogs, and staff recommends that this be a condition. There are residential properties in a pretty close proximity, 200 feet to the north, more like 400 to the east. So staff does recommend a condition limiting the maximum number of dogs to 15 to kind of help with noise, odor, or other impacts. And the applicant did work with the applicant on that number to kind of figure out what would work. And regarding transition, while the proposed use meets the required 200-foot setback from residential properties, just on the west side, the fence and the building don't meet the required 50-foot setback. So again, there's a large agricultural parcel located to the west. It's over 35 acres, though, so it is technically buildable for a dwelling. So they are requesting a variance for the building as well as the fence to be located at a 25-foot setback. Staff feels that a condition should be recommended that the fence meet the 50-foot setback just to provide a little bit more buffering because it is open versus the building having a reduced setback and being closed and insulated. So we are recommending that the fence meet the 50-foot setback from the fence, from the west property line. Again, the city of Slater is located just to the west, and there are several residential properties in between the city and this property, in addition to the agricultural parcel located to the west. Regarding traffic and parking, they are proposing parking. The applicant indicates that they will meet ADA requirements for parking, and they have provided sufficient space for an aisle. No loading areas are required in this case. There's no parking lot landscaping required because it is only the 3 parking spots. And so there's no screen really provided, but it is located kind of south to the dwelling, so it might be concealed from Highway 210. And no signs or lighting are proposed. Regarding environmental protection, the applicant will be following USDA guidelines for composting dog waste before it's applied on a field. The dogs will have supervision to assist in controlling barking and a privacy fence to screen them from Highway 210. Staff recommends, though, again, that the 50-foot setback from the west property line is maintained with the fenced open area. If the commission concludes that all of the above development criteria will be met, must recommend approval of the application unless it concludes that there's a strong probability the development will not adequately safeguard health and safety and welfare, impair adequate supply of light and air, increase congestion on roads, diminish property values, and not be in accordance with the C2C plan. So just on traffic, again, Highway 210 is pretty highly trafficked. Given the maximum number of dogs, it's 15, there really won't be any noticeable impact. And the assessor's office raised no concerns. And aside from that reduced west setback, all other setbacks are met, and so that would be in accordance with the CTC plan principles to ensure new development is providing adequate buffers with agricultural areas. Again, we would recommend that the fence meet the required 50-foot setback, but the building will be, they are requesting a variance to allow the building at a reduced 25-foot setback. We routed this for interagency review. We just noted that if they did decide in the future, we have sign requirements and permitting requirements for those. Environmental Health noted if they add a bathroom in the future, a septic permit will be required. We mailed notice to the property owners within a quarter mile and did not receive any comments, and we also notified the city of Slater. So again, just some points to consider. They're proposing to use an existing building for this use. There's a property with a dwelling across Highway 210, but over 200 feet away from the building. There aren't dwellings to the west and south, but those properties do meet minimum size requirements to be considered buildable for dwellings in the future. There are separate standards in our code for private kennels, as well as licensing requirements to the state. Slater is located 1.2 miles to the west. There is a fence proposed, but as proposed does not meet the 50-foot setback requirement from the west property line. The building is set back at a similar 25-foot setback, and so a variance is being requested. They are proposing landscaping, and a maximum number of 15 dogs is proposed. So staff recommends that you all recommend approval with conditions as follows: that the appropriate licensing is obtained from the Department of Agriculture at the state or federal level, and that the south end of the building is insulated prior to boarding dogs, that there's a maximum of 15 dogs, that the fenced area meet the required 50-foot setback from property lines, that a 25-foot variance be obtained to allow the existing building to be used with a reduced setback, and that proof of compliance with the first two conditions on the licensing and insulation be provided to the Planning and Development Department. So that would be alternative two. With that, I'll take any questions.
Questions you have for staff?
Yeah, so in their application, there were 12 kennels, so I reached out and said, hey, is 12 your maximum number? And they said, no, it's more like 15. So I said, okay, would that be okay if that was recommended as the maximum? And then they could always modify the conditional use permit if they did grow more. Just given the proximity to dwellings, we often do recommend a limit on the maximum number that could be changed, but they'd have to come back here, and we'd notify neighbors if they were growing.
Mm-hmm. Legally, I believe that you can only, for a dog daycare with one person, you can have a maximum of 15 dogs with a guideline. Not necessarily agricultural, but having 15 dogs with one supervised person, and that's kind of how we came to it. Now, having said that, there will also be boarding. So that, you know, we could bring in boarding dogs aside from the daycare, so there might be some overlap that those dogs aren't allowed to be in the daycare setting, according to legal aspects of the dog daycare.
So, Amelia, you're not necessarily referring to any particular standard. You're just ensuring that there not be zero cap. There not be no cap at all.
Right. Just for...
And in order to come up with a number, you've been
referring... Just,
just going back to our last application, too, you've just been referring with them on a number that works.
Exactly.
So that there's not no...
Right, exactly. Just so, you know, these uses can... Neighbors can have concerns about them. Just so... If they do grow, we go through a process that's, you know, neighbors are notified.
And just wanted to address the apparent inconsistency between the last one and this one. That was 14, this one's 15.
Sure, I just worked with the applicant to see. I think our goal is not to limit the, not to hurt the business, not to create a limit that's not workable for them, but just to make sure we're all on the same page to ensure that standards for compatibility and transition are met with the surrounding area.
I have another question, kind of another inconsistency between the two. I know that's two different cases, but one was there was a differentiation about waste spreading on the field. What was your USDA guidelines?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see that in the other cases.
Nope.
Can you speak to why those are all different?
Yeah, it's not anything that we require. It's what they're proposing to do.
Mm-hmm. Other than just recommendations for how composting is done, I don't know what the USDA standards for.
Mm-hmm. No.
Specifically composting before applying to an agricultural field.
Right. And again, we rabbit, you know, both plans to the Environmental Health Department. There's no requirements that we have. It's just that this applicant's application included, we will follow USDA guidelines.
Okay, so you're just kind of repeating that in
the narrative. Yep.
So I'm just
sure.
What's the significance of the insulation on the south wall?
Noise, because the kennels will be there.
And comfort.
And also temperature control and stuff for the animals who are in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'm trying to determine which is a land use issue. Land use and zoning issue, right? I can buy the noise, I guess. I don't know that it's our job to make sure that the energy loss isn't too high.
Yeah, there's a connection, too, with the ordinance that Amelia mentioned before, too, with the Animal Control Department.
So they have standards for air temperature and ventilation and that kind of thing in that ordinance.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Any questions for this guy?
Can I mention something else on the computer?
Yeah, actually, just one second.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It'll be your turn to...
I'm sorry.
You can tell us anything you want here in 1 second. Any other questions for this guy? Hey, second of the ride. Would you mind stepping up to the podium and just giving us your name and address for the record? It can be a business address if you like.
My name's Pam Wilson, and it is my daughter who is going to open the daycare. Part of this is it's from where she's came. She lived a year ago. She lived downtown Baltimore, and her dog went to daycare. And she decided she's going to move back home to her mom, thank goodness. And she lived downtown Des Moines and said, my dog wants a farm. And so she has this dog that is her child, and she's decided to quit her day job and open this business so that she can spend every day with her dog. I assure you that it's probably cleaner than most people's homes. Flo gets her paws wiped when she walks in the house, and I am confident that there will be no issues with the cleanliness or anything that's going on the facility. She's very excited and really wanted to find a place where the dogs were out of the city but still and close enough to proximity that she would have clients. So this just seemed like a really good location for her. With the building where it is, that whole entire area really is going to be dog play area for the dogs. They're going to be able to run around outside and just feel like, you know, it's perfect. on the where the fence is going to be, where we proposed it to go adjacent with that building, part of the reason we want to go along as with the building is because when we build those kennels on the south side, eventually she'd like to put runs out there so that the dogs have access. You know, there's a dog door that can be inside and outside at the same time if they're boarding. So that's kind of why we wanted to pull that fence into the variance request. Other than that, like I said, I'm not worried about noise, anything. It will be finely tuned.
Well, and where you're going with that is the fact that if we have to pull that fence in 50 feet, then that takes away from being able to use the kennel runs in the garage if that isn't, permission is not given. It's just kind of, I guess, why she's even like going with that. It's just like if we have to take the fence 50 foot in, which property-wise, I mean, I have enough land for it. Like she said, I'm turning it pretty much all into dog roaming free space. It would just take the opportunity for me to turn those, you know what I mean, those kennels into runs. I wouldn't be able to do that because we'd be cutting off 25 feet of into the garage in the end.
Questions for the applicant? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone would like to offer a comment on this application, on this proposal?
Hi,
Owen. Can you step up to the podium and give us your name and address, please?
Heather Bedingfield. I own Heather's Fur Babies here in Nevada, daycare and boarding. I am all for Molly doing this. I've been pushing her. My business, I'm booked full 2 months out for regular days. Holidays, 6 months out. My daycare, I have a waiting list. I can't even tell you. It's like a mile long. There's such a high demand. And I am so excited for her because it'd be nice for me to have someone I can trust to refer people to. It's an awesome business, and people love it. And mine, just like hers, is going to be out in the country. Most of my daycare dogs come from Ames. I have some that come all the way from Boone. Just because people are so excited to have a place for their dogs in the country, because so many people live in town and don't have yards and have to walk them on sidewalks, and so it's just exciting for them to have a place to take them in the country. But I just wanted to say I'm fully on board with her and support her, and I'm trying to help her any way I can.
Thank you very much. Anyone else like to speak to this application? Is there any commission discussion or motions? No additional questions?
Well, we're not dealing with the variance because CPA does that. We're just dealing with the issues.
Correct. The staff's recommendation builds in those variances as conditions.
It does recommend that 50 feet is met by the fence, though. So that kind of is intertwined with the variance request. It's requesting 50 feet, but for the purpose of meeting, you know, the standards for the use and standards for of transition, we're recommending that, you know, the conditional use permit require a 50-foot setback for the fence and outdoor areas.
A motion by Gable. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Bride to forward staff's recommendation to Board of Adjustments. Any discussion of the motion?
Yes, I have a question. So if we do that, she can't have a run?
No. You're just making a recommendation. So the Board of Adjustment could still grant the variance and not take that recommendation.
There's multiple runs. How many runs? There's multiple runs that are
there's like 10 kennels on the south side, and it's the building itself is like 46 feet wide. Let's see, I have a picture. So these are the proposed kennels on the inside. So they extend, you know, they, yeah. There's eight, so they extend starting at that westernmost point to the not quite the eastern side of the building. that's what the applicant's talking about.
To meet the 50-foot setback, you might impact half of those, is that fair to say?
More than half.
We would, like you said, we would prefer that the fence can go adjacent. It would mean that we would have to take 3 or 4 times out from having a run where the dogs can actually go outside. Doesn't mean they will never go outside, but it would just be easier for the dog to be able to go in. So it would impact those things.
Part of what we're trying to do is look to the future. It's an agricultural field right now. You saw there's several single-family dwellings along 210. It's possible that this area will be inside the city of Slater in the future. I don't know exactly when, but at some point. And as Amelia said, you could construct a single-family dwelling on that parcel and meet our requirements. So
to Slater and there's you then have to get a permit from the city of Slater.
Oh, we're just talking about generally. It's a high traffic corridor. Yeah, but yeah.
A lot of things that might happen.
Sure.
Which is what planning is, looking towards the future.
Slater's urban growth area doesn't. They don't have one in our C2C plan. So, what their future annexations might look like is unclear.
So we have a motion on the table. So we can go ahead and vote on that motion. Gary made the motion. We could withdraw the motion if he thought it worthwhile to drop that particular part of the condition. But unless we have a great deal more discussion on that, we'll call for the vote.
Of course, we'd love it to be dropped, but because we want to get members.
Can we get a roll call, please?
Cable.
Yes.
Seal.
Yes.
Birkin.
Yes.
McBride.
Yes.
Sherwin.
Yes.
Mintz.
Yes.
Okay. Get a positive recommendation moving forward. That you'd like to spend more time appealing to the Board of Adjustments on that. That's that map. That may be more of a focus of your presentation at the Board of Adjustments. Okay. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, let's get through the public hearings. So we are on to what was originally 7.2 in the agenda, CUP 07-18, Inroads Mineral Extraction.
Yeah. So this one is mineral extraction, not dog breeding or boarding. and so the property owner is Tannen Real Estate. The applicant is Inroads Construction. Joe Manat, I believe, represents both the applicant and the property owner, and he is here tonight if you have any questions. This property is located just south of 35 and 30 and the Hallett Materials AIM South Pit extraction use. It's mineral extraction to allow sand and gravel extraction. That's permitted in the A1 agricultural district with a conditional use permit, and also there's supplemental standards that require certain documents to be submitted. That includes archaeological studies, borings, information on groundwater flow, screening proposed, a restoration plan and bonding, performance standards, and so on. So this property is in total 47.24 net acres. It's on the east side of 560th Avenue. So that's 3/4 mile south of Highway 30. It partially is in agricultural production right now. There have been two previous conditional use permits that you saw on this property. So the first one was an asphalt plant in 2017. There's a gravel pad that's about 6 acres related to that one. Yeah. And then there was a borrow pit recently this year located on the south western corner of the site. That was operated by PCI. They have it actually expires this month. And so that would be required to be restored if this extraction use isn't approved. The borrow pit was removing dirt to use in reconstruction of northbound lanes on Interstate 35. 560th does dead end just south of the property. There is one farmer that still has some buildings and land just south of this use as well. So it only has about 20 cars a day. With the other uses that were located on the site, the applicants have maintained the roads themselves because, like with this use, for instance, there may include an additional 70 trucks a day on that road, and it's really hard for the county engineer to get down there with the grader to maintain it. So this is the site. You can see I just approximated the gravel pad, and then the proposed pit for extraction, existing borrow pit. So this is Interstate 35, and you can kind of see how it materials extraction used just to the north. So the existing 4.6 acre area that the borrow pit is located on is proposed. This current proposal is limited to that extent because that's the only location where an archaeological study was conducted. We would need a broader one for the entire parcel if the extraction use was proposed to extend beyond that 4.6 acre area. The applicant did submit boring logs to show what the deposit looked like. There is a deposit of sand and gravel at least 40 feet in depth. The applicant also submitted a hydrogeological study because the Nevada well field and the Ames well field are located under a mile from this site. So the study concluded as no dewatering of the pit will occur, no impacts on the well fields will occur. However, it did recommend to avoid impacts on groundwater that there should be additional structures located around chemicals, like berms and secondary containment structures to prevent any surface runoff into the pit that could cause contamination. The applicant indicates that the sand and gravel would be used for road construction projects, and specifically inroads, the applicant does produce asphalt and concrete, so specifically their road construction projects. Excavation will occur in two stages. Again, this current request is limited just to stage one. They would have to come back to propose stage two. And that's because the hydrological study and borings from the site were limited to 40 feet, and stage one is proposed to end at 40 feet. Stage two would be proposed to go 60 to 80 feet. And so stage one is just using an excavator that would dig down to 40 feet in depth, and that's estimated to take, depending on demand, about 3 years to complete. So this is the site plan. You can see this is the gravel pad. They will be using it as a sand processing plant location to wash the material. There will be several stockpiles, and an existing topsoil berm will remain on this site. This is the existing borrow pit pond that will be used where extraction will occur, and they are proposing another topsoil berm here to the west of the site. They are proposing to construct a flood control berm around the extracted area to ensure that no groundwater contamination occurs. This is pretty typical with other extraction uses in the area as well. Stormwater would then drain into the road ditch on 560th. Best management practices would be employed regarding the quality of that runoff into the roadway ditch, and we did route this to the county engineer to make sure that he had no concerns. They are required through the Iowa DNR to have an NPDES permit for stormwater discharges from extraction uses specifically, and they have submitted a stormwater pollution prevention plan that shows silt fencing will be used. Topsoil berms will be stabilized within 7 days. Other permits required include through the Iowa Mines and Minerals Bureau, and there are safety guidelines for extraction uses through the Mine Safety and Health Administration. Proposed work hours are 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. weekdays and 8 to noon Saturdays, and a maximum of 3 employees would work a shift. And there are no on-site wastewater treatment proposed. It would just be portable toilets. They have submitted a restoration plan showing that topsoil from the berm south of the plant will be respread. and reseed it in native grasses, the pond would remain. And then landscaping is proposed on the berm located to the west of the extraction pit, and that's proposed to be installed by 2020. They have provided a bond in the cost of, or I'm sorry, they will provide a bond covering the cost of the landscaping and reseeding. There is no berming or landscaping proposed on the east side of the site to provide screening from Interstate 35, however. This is the restoration plan. This shaded area is the seating. And then you can see the berm on the west side of the pit will remain, and then it will be planted by 2020 with a mix of trees. All adjacent parcels are in agricultural use with the exception of the parcel to the north, which is the location of Hallett Materials AIM South Pit, another extraction use. The reclamation plan for the Hallett Materials AIM South Pit, the restoration plan provided at the time of their conditional use permit, shows that the area will be left as a lake once the limits of extraction are reached. And related to that specific reclamation plan, in our C2C plan, we have a strategy to focus on high-priority natural areas, including working with AIMS to explore and prioritize Hallett Materials extraction use site located southwest of 35 and 30 for potential reuse and revitalization. So with that in mind, the restoration plans are very important. You know, there is a strategy to work on the revitalization of the extraction use to the north in our comprehensive plan, and so similarly, this would fall within that strategy. This is the Ames Urban Fringe Plan designations. You can see it, we're located in a natural area due to the South Skunk River its floodplain. There is some agriculture and farm service area over here, and there is an industrial reserve, but there are several dwellings located across 35 to the east. This is zoning and surrounding land use. So the zoning is mainly A1 agricultural. Part of Hallett Materials is zoned A2 agribusiness. I will point out that this is the former truck stop. It's located within the city of Ames, and it's zoned highway-oriented commercial, which may look similar to the hotels across the street in the future. The city's been working to improve the site with the property owner to encourage redevelopment. So again, the subject property is here, located on 560th Avenue, just to the south of both the Hallett's use, which I didn't mention before. That expires in 2035, and then this highway-oriented commercial use. There is another extraction use that OMG Midwest operates here as well. Some site photos. I kind of collaged these together to make a panorama. So this is looking north on 560th and the gravel pad. There are some stockpiles of materials used in the asphalt plant and for that borrow pit existing. The borrow pit use is still active. And you can kind of see the existing berm located just to the south of this gravel pad. This is the borrow pit itself. You can see Highway 30, Interstate 35, located just to the east. You can kind of see some semis. And there is an existing silt fence that will be maintained as well. This is looking north. You can kind of see the Hallett Materials stockpiles over this tree line in this photo. Just wanted to show that for reference. So there is an existing tree line to the north. However, stockpiles may exceed the height of that tree line depending. There's a 40-foot height maximum that will be followed, however. And you can kind of see one of the hotels across Highway 30 as well in that photo. So standards for approval. In regards to compatibility, it's adjacent to a similar extraction use. That use is permitted until 2035. They are requesting that a first stage of extraction be proposed or be approved, and that first stage on this site would only last 3 years, so until 2021. Additionally, if phase two were proposed, they'd have to come back, modify the permit with additional information on hydrological impacts at that 80-foot depth. Borings showing that the 80-foot depth is the deposit extends that far. So on transition, two berms are proposed on the south side of the gravel pad and processing plant, and on the west side of the pit, there is an existing tree line to the north. No landscaping is proposed to the east to provide screening from Interstate 35. Landscaping will be planted on the berm to the west of the extraction pit, and that's recommended as a condition, not just to provide screening now, but in the future when this site is restored, that will allow us to have established vegetation on the site for when that site is restored and reaches its end use, if reuse of a conservation or other use is what happens at the end life of this project. Staff also recommends that a sufficient amount of topsoil be maintained on site to create a berm for landscaping to be respread on the site. The applicant did indicate that topsoil would be sold, but we just want to make sure that there's a sufficient amount left on the site to be respread for the restoration plan to encourage, growth of native grasses and that kind of thing. Traffic would enter the site via an existing drive off 560th. There is an existing access that was widened for a previous use with a permit from the Story County engineer. The applicant will maintain and restore 560th Avenue at its own cost during times of operation because it is a very difficult place for the county engineer to maintain. Traffic would flow counterclockwise around the stockpiles and exit via the same drive. And the applicant indicates that while no new traffic will be created because they'll be sharing traffic with Hallett Materials to the north, folks might come farther south to get their materials. It could add 70 truckloads a day on that use. And then on parking and loading, 5 parking spaces are proposed. The maximum number of employees per shift is 3, so a few more than the maximum number of employees. We don't specifically have any parking maximums for this type of use, though. That number seems to be in line with other similar uses, for instance, manufacturing plants. And the general public will not access or park on the site. Regarding loading, there won't be a scale house on this site like in other extraction uses because the equipment will have scales in it to weigh. So there won't be a need for a loading area with a scale. No signs and lighting are proposed. And then on environmental protection, they did submit a hydrogeological study to look at impacts on groundwater and found that there wouldn't be any issues with dewatering. However, it was recommended that secondary containment structures around fuel and other chemicals are provided, including berms, to prevent surface runoff that may contaminate groundwater that enters the extracted area. And the applicant is also proposing to construct a flood control berm around the extracted area that would be 1 foot in height above the floodplain level. They do need an NPDES permit from the IODNR for the use. And a floodplain permit as well. And that floodplain permit will include a flood evacuation plan. Moving into the analysis section, looking at, not creating excess traffic, there's 20 cars a day on 560th right now, according to traffic counts, but they would be maintaining the road themselves. So additional 70 trucks a day, while it would have an impact, they will be taking care of that impact. And regarding having a unduly decreasing or having an undue impact on property values, that standard, the assessor raised no concerns. And regarding not being in accordance with our comprehensive plan, this is the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. We do have a policy to permit interim development to occur that will support the long-term urbanization of the Ames Urban Fringe area. This is the first stage was proposed to take 3 years, so until 2021. you know, overall with the second stage, that could take 10 years, but that's just within this 4.6 acre area. If the area was expanded, you know, it could be more time. It just depends on what future requests come. But the current proposal of 2021 for the first stage of extraction is, you know, an interim development that may help with road projects in the area. You know, with future requests for stage two or an expanded area, I think we review this standard again to see if it was an interim use. Because we do have a strategy to focus in the C2C plan on the use and revitalization of that, you know, Hallett South Pit to the north as well. And that permit expires in 2035. They have submitted a restoration plan as part of their application, which kind of relates to this condition, showing that, you know, landscaping is proposed now, they will recede, and there is a bond that's required as part of that. This plan doesn't show any landscaping to the east of the site, though, where 35 is located, so staff recommends a condition that a berm and landscaping be constructed on the east side, just in line with the limits of extraction, to provide some extra screening now and then in the future have established landscaping when restoration does occur. So we routed this to an interagency review team and had some comments of our own. One of our comments, we just requested more specific information on how the performance standards were met by this proposal, including on slopes and, you know, on the flood control berm, that kind of thing. On the pattern of mining, it will occur in a semicircular pattern. On landscaping, and the restoration plan. So we've worked with the applicant on obtaining that information. Emergency management had some comments about the evacuation plan as part of the floodplain permit, and so we will review that as well as that department when the floodplain permit is applied for after the conditional use permit is approved. And then the engineer had those comments about road maintenance on 560th needing to be taken care of by the applicant. We sent notices to property owners within a quarter mile and did not receive any comments, and we also sent them to Ames and Gilbert and did not receive comments. So just some points to consider. I need a drink real quick. Sorry, my throat's getting a little scratchy. One more. Sorry, yeah.
Points to consider, applicant is requesting phase one of extraction be approved to a 40-foot depth using an excavator over a three-year period. Six of the seven borings in the hydrogeological study are limited to 40 feet in depth. A hydrogeological study was submitted on potential impacts to groundwater with extraction at a 40-foot depth. Four, the site is adjacent to Hallett Materials South Pit, a similar mineral extraction use permitted until 2035.
Yeah, the applicant indicated that a flood control berm will be constructed around the pit. Two berms are proposed on the south side of the gravel pad and processing plant. And there's an existing tree line to the north. And a restoration plan shows that the top soil berm will be respread. That's located south of the pad. Landscaping is only currently proposed on that western berm. There is a restoration bond that's required to be submitted as part of their restoration plan. And the applicant indicates that no new traffic will be created. And the floodplain permit is required. So we're recommending that you recommend approval with a couple conditions. That this permit is very clearly only limited to the first stage of extraction, which is to the 40-foot depth with an excavator over the next 3 years. Anything beyond that will require a conditional use permit. So that would mean the extraction use ceases by December 31st, 2021, unless the conditional use permit is modified. Also, once restoration is completed, the site shall be inspected by the Planning and Development Department prior to releasing the bond security. landscaping shall be installed by 2020, June 1st, in accordance with the submitted restoration plan on the western berm. We will do an inspection after that landscaping is completed as well. Regarding the phase two proposal, it's a condition that we'd like to see in a hydrogeological study for depths greater than 40 feet and make sure the deposit is determined to extend 80 feet before we consider an application for the second stage of extraction, that the flood control berm is installed, that sufficient topsoil is kept on site to allow restoration, that a bond covering the cost of restoration and landscaping is submitted. Once landscaping is completed and we've done that inspection, we could reduce the cost of the bond just to the cost of the reseeding. That secondary containment structures around fuel and chemicals be used. That a floodplain permit be obtained. That the road is restored and maintained as determined by the Story County engineer, by the applicant. And that they use water to water the gravel pad and roadway to prevent excess dust. So that is alternative two. Approval with conditions. Any questions?
So, Beth, you said water draining off the site, they were going to be washing the gravel. The water would go to the west to a ditch.
Is that you don't want it to run into the extracted area, because that pit, if it gets surface runoff, could contaminate groundwater. And so you'd want a berm around that area. You wouldn't want to direct the runoff from the surface water into the extracted area where groundwater might be.
Sufficiently directs the runoff, in your mind?
Mm-hmm.
In your mind, the plan sufficiently directs that runoff?
Yeah, we routed it to the county engineer to review. He said he didn't have any concerns.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You invite the applicant to step up to the podium and tell us your name and address, business address, and offer any comments you might have, or just be available for questions.
Yes, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for taking the time to review this application. My name is Joe Manette. Our business address of Inroads LLC is 4224 Hubble Avenue, Des Moines, Iowa. My name is Joe Manette. I was formerly with Manette's Incorporated, if some people know that name. But I started a new asphalt paving company, and this is right in line with what I did when I was at Manette's Incorporated, too, was processing sand. I was in charge of this operation for Manette's, of the property that Manette's owns in this area. So I can assure you that we have experience in this area. We have experience, although we're a new company, we have experience in processing sand, managing all the regulations that you need to follow these days, your applications for mining permits, keeping track of your stormwater runoff, getting your bonding. I mean, we're a fully capable operation, but we are looking to start a sand extraction in this area. To supply raw materials into our new company. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions that you might have about the processing of all this. One thing you might note, it might be of note to talk about the three-year approval. Why is it so short when across the road it's maybe up to 2035 of extraction? This is the first phase of one, and we want to determine. We've determined that there's sand there by drilling, making borings, and turning those in as required to make sure that there is sand there. We don't know who else we're going to sell to besides ourselves. So there's a lot of uncertainty with how the market's going to go and how the market's going to react. But we can assure you that we are going to buy the product that's coming off that ground. So we know there's going to be a use for some of the sand, and we're going to reevaluate. It's very expensive to do all this due diligence to 80 feet versus 40 feet. So we wanted to see how phase one would go, and then we will be back and hopefully be asking for phase two approval when the time comes in 3 years.
Are you okay with the conditions proposed by the staff?
Yes.
Any questions of the applicant? Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
All right, any commission remaining questions or discussion of the motions?
I guess a follow up question.
Oh, I'm sorry. I need to open the public hearing and see if there's anyone here who would like to speak or offer comments about the proposal tonight. Okay.
This is a follow up to my question for staff.
Yeah.
Regarding this being in a floodplain, mm-hmm. and you're saying there's going to be runoff into a ditch. And that's okay, it's going in the right direction, but we certainly wouldn't want it somehow to get into this, the pit that's there.
Mm-hmm.
It's in a floodplain.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. So that's why the flood control berm is recommended to be constructed a foot higher than base flood elevation level. So if it flooded, the flood water wouldn't get in either. Is that your question?
So the water that's going into the ditch will stay within that berm.
It's only really a portion of the stormwater. It's like the western portion because most of the site drains to the south and southeast.
Site naturally drains from north to south. Mm-hmm. I mean, it does it right now. We're only talking about when it rains on the site, that's the stormwater runoff. And then if we put the berm around the cell, there's not going to be corn stalks and dirt going into the mine cell. So that's the purpose of the 1 foot berm around the water.
1 foot above the floodplain, flood stage.
1 foot above the FEMA 500 year flood stage.
500 year flood.
That happens every year.
Then they're changing.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And we could amend a berm when the new regulations come out, too. I mean,
he also provided some written information about an evacuation plan, so he's going to monitor like the flood stage level for equipment that can be removed. His plan is to remove it and
that
relocate
works,
it to a different site.
Chemicals on site that doesn't work for water that's already.
Yeah.
I'm just adding to the conversation.
Fair enough.
Uh-huh. Actually, like state commission.
Did you have a question about the conditions, Linda?
I mentioned the berm.
There were several, I know.
Yes. The one regarding berming, let's see. Where is it?
Part of it is to try to compare the use to the north, which is the similar use, and there's a berming requirement for that use as well.
And their berm was 1 foot above the 100-year base flood elevation level. So what Joe just suggest it was the 500 year?
Oh, I...
Oh, okay.
It's the FEMA flood elevation data that you get. I thought it was a 500 year data, but it could be a 100.
Okay. And that's a 1 foot berm. I guess most structures are required to be elevated 18 inches above base flood elevation level?
Under our ordinance.
Under our current ordinance? Is that something you want to consider? And we put this one under the environmental protection standard because it's protecting the groundwater.
I'm sorry if I missed this, but did Leanne, acting as our floodplain manager, have any comments about the height of the berm?
Actually, we review the actual floodplain permit after the CUP action has taken place. But I can tell you we've done some cursory review of it.
There's no reason to think that these conditions, if applied, won't result in a project that can get the floodplain permit.
We think with the conditions it will help with the floodplain permit application.
So you just need a paid conditional use permit, and you should be in a lid for a floodplain permit that could basically.
Right, that floodplain permit, you know. Did you wrap that one to the DNR?
It would have to acquire a permit, a floodplain permit.
From the county. From the county. Sometimes it involves the state. It depends on impact to what, you know, waters of the state. That communication has not taken place yet.
But it would be required on top of the floodplain permit, would be required on top of
yeah.
Correct. It would be separate.
Yes.
Okay.
Looking for an action. So,
I'm sure how to state I move that we accept the second one. For you.
I think that's appropriate. Yeah.
Okay.
So we have a motion to go with staff's recommendation as our recommendation to the Board of Adjustment. Is there a second to that?
Thank you.
We have a motion by McBride and a second by Minutes.
Correct.
Okay, we'll call both of these.
Merkin.
Yes.
Cable.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
McBride.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Okay. Thank you for coming in. Your proposal advances to the Board of Adjustment. Okay. Why don't we take about a 5 minute recess? We'll start up here at the end. I guess let's make an 8 minute recess. We'll be back at 25 after the hour. And we will take up the ordinances. Okay, let's call it back to order and get on with our ordinances. Beginning with the access easement, ordinance 276.
Okay, I think with all of these, since you've seen them before, we're going to try to be super brief. Okay, so this one, since you last saw it, has two main changes. We eliminated the 50-foot length limit because you had concerns about the purpose of that. But we introduced a width requirement just to ensure that access easements are wide enough. So that width requirement would be, 20 feet for a single-family dwelling and 50 feet for more than one single-family dwelling or other uses. Only other note is that we have also now clarified that this ordinance, these requirements apply for lots, parcels, or tracts intended for development purposes. So I think there was a question about agriculture last time, and so we've clarified that this is for development purposes. And that's it.
Any questions?
Cool.
Questions?
questions.
We did route this to, I don't know who was here at the last meeting.
I didn't hear anything.
Yeah, no, we took that requirement out, so I'm assuming that means that he supports it.
Mm-hmm.
And we are acting tonight, asked to act on this ordinance, a recommendation on this ordinance to the Board of Supervisors. So we do need to officially open a public hearing and note on the record there is no one in the room. They have a chance to comment on this ordinance. So we will close the hearing, and Commission, it's up to you. We have a motion by Merkin and a second by Menz. Is there any discussion on this motion? Roll call, please.
Cable.
Yes.
McBride.
Yes.
Sherwood.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Menz.
Yes.
Merkin.
Yes.
And we are on to ordinance number 275 regarding land division requirements, site plan standards, and in particular traffic impact analysis study. Who's taking this one?
Me.
All right.
You got me. This came from the C2C comprehensive plan. We put it into our work program in 2017. That's when we started working on it. We've been to the Planning and Zoning Commission a few times, going through different drafts. We provided an overview, took into account comments that were provided. It's been to the County Attorney's Office a couple of times. And for the most part, the ordinance addresses what the impact would be for commercial, industrial-type development, in addition to major subdivisions, so subdivisions that involve more than four lots. And the idea is we're trying to get an idea as to how much traffic would be generated from commercial, industrial development, or from major subdivisions. There will be an automatic requirement to submit a transportation impact analysis with proposed commercial industrial development, with proposed subdivision, major subdivision plans that would be submitted with the preliminary plat. And so based on that information, which is to be submitted by a professional licensed Iowa engineer, based on that information, it will tell us whether or not a limited traffic study is needed from 0 to up to 100 cars generated from the project. If it's more than 100, then it kicks in this complete traffic study that would be needed. If you look at the actual ordinance, there's several items that are required. The complete study has probably twice the amount of information and data and analysis, and the goal is to provide input for the county engineer, for the staff that do the reviews, for the Planning and Zoning Commission, and then ultimately the Board of Supervisors, who has the authority to take action. The engineer and the county Board of Supervisors have the authority to waive any limited or complete traffic study if they deem that it's not necessary. And then the information that's provided would be helpful each year as we do capital improvements planning to try to figure out, you know, what, if any of these proposed improvements, whether they be to the road or to intersections, you know, how much of this, if any, would be budgeted and paid by the county, and how much of it may possibly be paid for by the actual applicant of the project. So that is generally the background. We've added definitions of level of service, definitions for traffic calming, the analysis that's done, and the study,
incorporated the language into the major subdivision plat, so we're referencing the analysis and the study that's required. And then much of the details are in the general site planning standards, which is where you find the requirements for commercial and industrial improvements as well as subdivisions. That's where a lot of the details lie. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
So, a analysis is required before conceptual review for major subdivisions and...
It'd be at the preliminary plat stage.
Okay.
Yep.
And a traffic impact study is eventually required, but not early on like that.
Right.
Okay. And the study is the big deal. The analysis is the small deal.
Right. Correct. Okay. And that study is broken down into the limited and the complete, based on how many vehicles will be generated.
Where is that? The difference between the limited and the complete?
Yeah, if you go to 4A is the limited traffic impact, and
okay,
that's 4A, and 4B is complete traffic impact study.
Thanks.
Now, we've routed this. We've had meetings with the county engineer and the assistant county engineer several times, and they are in support of this ordinance.
You have the definition for a traffic impact study, and then you fork it into limited and complete. Is there, when you create that fork, is there any potential for it not being fully defined in the definition, or creating any conflicts with the definition, or do you need to just define each of those? You know what I mean? So you have a definition for the traffic impact study,
yeah,
but you don't have a definition for a limited study and a complete study, even though you fork it like that later on in the ordinance. Is there any potential for...
I suppose there could be a... We don't want to risk having requirements listed in the definition.
Yeah.
That's what differentiates
us. Yeah, we've run into that a lot, where we've been in the mode of taking out.
I'm with you. I think simpler is better, but I'm just saying that's also that sort of thing sometimes introduces unintended consequences.
Yeah. But it's very clear about what's required for the limited compared to what's required for the complete.
And it is under a heading.
Right.
Content of the traffic impact study, and you have defined traffic impact study. Okay.
And the opening is, if it's up to 100, it's a limit. You require to write this information. If it's more than 100, you require to write this.
Okay.
Thank you.
What other questions do you have?
So you said this could be used, would be used for a capital improvements plan, which makes a lot of sense. How would it be used by this commission in terms of subdivision requests?
You would have the ability to review the information along with the actual subdivision plan.
And if it was determined because of the traffic impact study that there could be some real problems, would that be a reason to deny?
Well, you're a recommending body, so you could have a recommendation based on
to
information.
Deny based on the results of the traffic impact study.
Everything that we require in this ordinance, we're going to make sure that the Planning and Zoning Commission has at their purview to review.
And it would be a legitimate reason, according to your, because you always run through, we have to have, if you're going to deny this request, it's got to meet these criteria. So that would include a favorable traffic impact study.
But I would also hope that we would be providing better information to the county engineer's office for them to interpret and make more comprehensive recommendations or comments back to the planning commission and the board of supervisors.
Yeah, that's part of the goal.
That's got multiple uses.
Yeah.
It doesn't really say them in the ordinance that you can be used for this or not used for that, but it's got those multiple uses, which all makes sense.
Right. That's kind of the nice part about having the analysis done at conceptual review, because the engineer is sitting in the room and reviewing that in advance, right?
Correct. Yeah. I think you're correct that it's not something that we can do, because that was something that we were considering as we got into the preparation of this ordinance.
That answers my so what question.
There aren't any other immediate questions. Let's open the public hearing for the record, and again acknowledge that we don't appear to have anyone with any comments in the room, but was there any comments submitted by email or letter or other forms of communication on this?
We looked at a number of different ordinances for our starting point, including the adjacent counties. Really worked with the county engineering office. They're pretty excited, I think, about the potential for this as we continue to grow and change.
Let's close the public hearing then. Do we have a motion? Planning Commission?
I would move that we recommend ordinance number 2746.
We have a motion by Merkin. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion by Merkin, a second by Sherwood to recommend approval of the draft ordinance to the Board of Supervisors. Is there any discussion on the motion? Roll call vote, please.
Merkin.
Yes.
McBride. Yes. Men. Yes. Sherwin. Yes. Steele. Yes. Cable. Yes. 8. Then we are on to Ordinance 278 regarding home business and conditional use.
Home businesses. A couple of things that we've mentioned in the previous meetings is, from our reviews, we've noticed some compliance problems with regard to meeting the regulations, number of employees, outside storage, number of buildings used. And so this ordinance somewhat takes that into account. We've had discussions with the commission about our current ordinance, the current language. We don't have anything in the way of assisting home businesses that have plans for growth, whether they be minimal plans or substantial plans. With this proposed amendment, they would have the ability to submit an application that would be reviewed administratively, which would be a minimal easing of the current standards. If the application comes in and it's determined by the planning and development director that more than a minimal, then the planning and development director can suggest or recommend that the full substantial easing process take place, which would be through the conditional use permit in Chapter 90, which involves starts with conceptual review. They go to the Planning and Zoning Commission, and then ultimately the Board of Adjustment. So there's appeals process. The applicant can appeal the Planning and Development Director's decision. There's an appeals process through the CUP process.
And the other thing that was changed was the review period. Currently, we're doing a review annually, and so we changed that to biannually. So we want to do a review once every 2 years.
Happy to answer questions.
And again, another thing that we changed from last time was they have to show that they're in compliance for at least a year, or whether it's a minimal or a significant, substantial, easing of the requirements before they can ask for the.
That might require somebody who oversteps their permit to pull back for a year and be within compliance before they can go back to expand.
Or if they're in compliance for 8 months, maybe pull back for a couple months.
Yeah.
Questions for staff? Open the public hearing. And let's close. Well, any comments from the submitted from the public by email or phone or? Okay.
No, it was published.
All right, let's close the hearing then. Do a motion?
We do plan to do outreach on this, particularly with our current home business owners, to let them know if it's approved by the Board of Supervisors.
I move to recommend ordinance number 278 to Board of Supervisors.
A motion by Merkin and a second by Menz to recommend approval of the ordinance to the Board of Supervisors. Is there discussion on the motion? Roll call vote, please.
Cable.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Merkin.
Yes.
McBride.
Yes.
Sherwood.
Yes.
Menz.
Yes.
Go up there.
All right, ordinance 279 regarding commercial campground and travel trailer parks.
Cabins are permitted to be constructed in a commercial campground and RV park. This has been before the Planning and Zoning Commission. The biggest thing that we changed upon recommendation from the commission was we took out the language that limits or restricts the use. Again, this is a private business. Currently, we restricted the months throughout a calendar year that a private campground could operate, and in the winter months, we limited the use to 30 days. We took all that language out. The language that is in there does address the amount of days that are permitted to stay in a cabin, to stay in an RV, the 30 days. Because the commercial campground RV park is a conditional use permit, it's written such that the applicant can request through the CUP to do an extension of that 30 days to stay in a cabin, to stay in an RV beyond that 30 days. That application. And then we're saying that cabins are not permitted in a residential manufactured housing district. RVs are permitted, however, with a submittal of a conditional use permit.
Questions for staff and basic changes? Let's open the public hearing, acknowledge that there are no members of the public in the room, and ask if you receive any communication on this from the public.
We did not, but we did we did put it in the three papers that we published.
Close the public hearing then, and entertain a motion.
I would move to approve the ordinance as amended.
I would second that.
We have a motion by Cable and a second by McBride. Any discussion on the motion? Roll call, please.
Mintz.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
McBride.
Yes.
Sherwood.
Yes.
Cable.
Yes.
Merkin.
Yes.
All right. We'll move through that so swiftly and efficiently.
Very swift.
Comments from the staff.
The only thing I have is just to remind you of the joint meeting with the Story County Conservation Board, potentially sometime at the end of November. And then we have our joint meeting with the Board of Supervisors December 5 to go over the work program. And so normally that is from 4 to 5, and then from 5 to whenever is the regular scheduled meeting.
What do you anticipate?
There may be a few things, but
no more
things happen at this point.
Agritourism.
Oh, yeah. Which potentially we have one.
Oh. Okay. All right.
So show of hands maybe on the December 5. Again, that's it's an opportunity to we go through the current work program 2018. What we've accomplished, what we haven't accomplished. Talk about new projects. Potentially so I'll be thinking about that.
Okay, with you, man. Great. Any commission comments?
I'm just glad to see all these ordinances getting done, and I want to thank the staff for your patience as we discussed them again and again. And
what it takes.
I think you did a really good job. It's a good product.
I think we have a slick process.
I'd like to echo that and say, in particular, on the whole business one, I think that is a good thing for the county, but it's hard from your seat to go out there and be the first to write something like that. You're so used to saying, who else does it?
Right.
How do they do it?
They always want to compare to somebody else.
And I think, could end up in court and get shot down in 2 months, right?
Let's hope that doesn't happen.
I mean, I think it's solid, but I'm saying, whenever you do something, you run that risk. But I think that being innovative in the interest of the Story County residents is what we're calling.
It sends the right message. We want to work with people and to a minimum, if it's a minimum level, you can stay. If it's a more grand plan, then you have to have a plan to exit. And we're going to work with you to do that.
Very good. Good work, staff. Any other comments for the commission? Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Hello.
Brian, a second. By amends, we are adjourned. Thanks, everybody.